You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 67 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of ComicBook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I just got the core crew. I got Matthew Aguilar.
What up?
And Janelle Wheeler.
Hello.
And we got a lot to run through, so we're keeping it tight on the crew today because there's a lot to talk about. We're going to be talking about the new trailer. Yeah, I know, right? Right? We got an uptick in content again, so we can actually talk about some stuff. So instead of just yelling at each other, which I also love, but not with this crew. This is not like a very volatile crew. So let's stick to the news today. We got to talk about Star Wars. The Mandalorian Season 2 just dropped its trailer, so we're hyped about that. And we got some related Star Wars news. Marvel just put down a big casting that we got to talk about. Plus, we might have some sad news about that Black Widow movie release. And we're going to deep dive into quick recaps of both The Boys and Lovecraft Country, because I think we've hit spots in both those shows that are worth stopping and talking about right now. And then we're going to review Netflix's The Social Dilemma, the documentary that has a lot of us throwing up in our mouths right now. And after that, we are going to run down comics because it's been a minute, but we're back and there's comic stuff we got to talk about. So, yeah, like I said, let's get to all of that. All right, up top, let's talk about The Mandalorian. So we got the trailer for Season 2 of the show, the Disney Plus Star Wars series, and yeah, it was good to be back, right? Like, it's good to see everybody back. You get to see Mando. You get to see, I'm not calling him Darjan Jin or whatever that. He's Mando to me. Like, I'm sticking with that. And Baby Yoda. I'm sticking with
that. Yeah, same with Baby Yoda. Yeah, that's right.
So, and you got to see them back. They're on the run. This one looks a lot more kind of woven into where we're getting closer to the Star Wars sequel trilogy, where we're beginning to see kind of those Imperial elements that become the First Order. And things kind of taking shape as Mando's trying to get the child back to its people, which in this now they've kind of taken a hard turn into main Star Wars lore by saying he's got to essentially get the kid back to the Jedi, which is a tall order because if you know your Star Wars history, Mandalore and the Jedi have this connected history that goes back. Like the Darksaber was forged by the first Mandalorian who became a Jedi. But then they kind of had the culture had a falling out with the Jedi Order, which resulted in this very old war. And a lot of that can play out in like the High Republic that's coming up, because a lot of that stuff, the skirmishes between the Jedi and the Mandalorians happened during that era. And so like, yeah, we're getting to see all these seeds and being woven together. And of course it has the same vibe. And so we got to see something, Matt. We're going to let you get to kind of drop what you're real excited about here in a second about the aspect of the trailer you really loved. I'm going to say overall, I liked it. It had that same flavor. The ending scene was really cool with Baby Yoda kind of ducking into his orb when there's trouble and hearing kind of Mando lay out a bunch of guys and do all that. It was cool. Yeah. It looks like it's going to be badass again. But I'm not saying this to be a downer. I'm just being real. I love the trailer, and I was like, yeah, I'm like psyched for this to be come back. But it also made me like kind of like bittersweet because nothing will be, I think, as ever as cool as that first Mandalorian teaser that came out. Like,
Gosh, yeah, that's really hard to.
Yeah, that was really hard to top. I just was, you know, and I was an unfair expectation on my part, but I love that teaser so much. That was like my favorite teaser of that year.
I feel like they have a knack for these teasers slash trailers in general. Like, I was very excited about this, just like with the narration and what they chose to show, not revealing too much. It was just, I don't know. I was very excited by this. I think they do such a good job with these.
Oh, no. Yeah. Again, let me reiterate before I get into this. I love this trailer, but you know, you're always looking for that return high of like that first one where you were just like, oh my God.
He hates the Mandalorian. Yeah, I know.
Please, no. I don't need that smoke. I don't need smoke with Star Wars fans, please. I love all this. So, yeah. So, I mean, this is good stuff, and I'm looking forward to it. I hope we
Richard dropping love in the chat.
That's so sweet. I love it.
I know. I got distracted by Richard. You know, it's Star Wars. Richard's getting in on this. Our main man, engineer Richard, huge Star Wars fan. I mean, the Tennessee Titans and Star Wars are about as big as it gets for Richard. And so far now he's. He has a Tennessee Titans appearance under his belt. He needs a Star Wars one,
yeah.
And then he's going to be set for life here.
We should start a campaign.
Yeah.
Get Richard on Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I will back that campaign in a heartbeat.
Well, tell your boy Brandon Davis to get on it. All right. All right. Matt, drop what you were really excited about. Let's take it in a positive direction again. There was something you were really psyched about this trailer for a personal reason.
Yeah. But,
wait, personal?
Well, okay, not
well. Like, personal to him.
I'm like, do you know her?
No.
So, but yeah. So about mid. Well, it's about midway. It's about midway to like 75% of the way through the trailer. There's some really cool, like narration going on about the Jedi, which we can talk about a little bit. It's probably purposefully misleading, but it's talking about that. And then, kind of in the corner, they do this pan, and you see this cloaked figure, and like. WWE people were like, oh my God, that's Sasha Banks. And that had been rumored that she was like on the set and she had gone back and forth some social stuff, but like nothing had been confirmed. So to actually like see her in the trailer was dope. Cool. She's like a huge geek anyway and loves all this stuff. So it's awesome. Like it's always awesome to see that crossover. Yeah. We still don't know who she's playing. She's been linked to a couple names. I know Sabine Wren was one that's been floating around a lot more, but there's like two other names that have kind of been thrown out there. So that, I mean, I'm excited for that because I cannot wait. I mean, we've seen like with Carano, like they're really good about bringing these people in and giving them substantial parts. They don't take over. They're not overtaking of the plot or anything, but they're really quality parts that make you feel like, oh, that wasn't just a cameo. It wasn't just someone getting to be in the show.
I mean, The Mandalorian does a good job. Like there were so many cameos in season one of famous people. And even the ones you recognize and even the ones you didn't because of the makeup or like they were doing the CJ character, like they were all fun and they were all substantial. Didn't feel cheap. Like, oh, one of those winking, like there's that guy. Like,
It wasn't Ed Sheeran in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. No.
Oh my gosh.
It was actually really cool.
Wow.
Ming-Na Wen. And like when she became a bounty hunter and she was like such a badass, like it was great. So
yeah,
I'm looking forward to that tradition continuing.
Very much. And I really liked the trailer. I will say that I came in kind of wanting my expectations were I wanted more of what I loved about the first season. So maybe admittedly I came in with like a little bit of a lower bar of like what to expect. I was just like, I want more Mando and Baby Yoda. Like I want more of that and that fun sense of adventure. And that was totally in this. And with the best little sequence that's already like taken off on social where he like pushes the button and the little thing closes and all that stuff. It's so good. I cannot wait for more of that. So
yeah. I'm stoked. Mandalorian's coming to save our fall and late fall. I mean, the boys is holding
all by itself, man.
Thank goodness. It's all out here. All by itself.
We got a Kofi singing this time. Oh my gosh. Oh,
if you hear a beautiful voice in a bar singing a very sad song, they're odds it's me. All right, anyway, moving on to happier stuff once again. So we also have a rumor on the Star Wars front from one of our trusted scoopers, Mr. Daniel RPK. Is hearing that there's going to be some kind of, we've been hearing rumblings about various Star Wars projects that are cooking over at Lucasfilm. Some of these are a lot like we've heard one about, we discussed about the Kylo Ren series or what project it might be. We still don't know. And a similar kind of conversation is apparently happening about a Mace Windu kind of project primarily focusing on young Mace Windu with a new actor, but also having Samuel L. Jackson there for appearances and kind of key connections to the, you know, Star Wars prequel series. So that'd be kind of cool. And I put a joke in the show notes, but I was kind of not joking, but it was just has,
I did see that joke.
Yeah, has John Boyega, you know, finally scared Star Wars into making some black Star Wars. And it's just like, you know, if you haven't been following along, John Boyega has been getting his Star Wars rear end pretty hard since that contract has been up. And he's basically been kind of just saying, and fairly so, that like, not even talking trash or anything, but just sharing his experience of making the sequel trilogy and his disappointments with how kind of Finn was first touted as being this centerpiece of, you know, of The Force Awakens. And then, you know, the kind of backlash and racism he experienced, in not just from like, you know, trolling fans, but like in marketing in other countries and where they were just kind of like removing him and stuff like that. And then kind of calling out Lucasfilm for kind of buckling to that and then sidelining Finn as kind of a side character and not having much to do by the end of the series. So is this the counterbalance? I don't know, but I would love to see a young Mace Windu series, because Samuel L. Jackson made him one of the cooler parts of Star Wars. And he was kind of like, where Yoda was the wise part of the council, he was like the mighty part, like the strong guy. And seeing that story would be cool. So,
and there's so much there that, like, we're even excited about Obi-Wan, right? About a young Obi-Wan series, and yet, or, you know, like, just seeing more of Obi-Wan's life. And that has been explored to an extent. Like, Windu's is open. Like, there's so much that is just not talked about or not shown in his very limited time on screen. So, I mean, that would be so cool to explore.
Star Wars has been doing a good job of kind of going back and retroactively making events that we've seen feel more significant. Like the Clone Wars series made the whole falling out between Anakin and Obi-Wan and Revenge of the Sith feel more powerful, because we had all that backstory of their friendship and, you know, how Obi-Wan had mentored him and all that. And I would like to see that done for Mace Windu, about that cheesy scene where Palpatine kills him. I would like to know more about why that was such a significant moment, because of how powerful Mace Windu was as a Jedi, for him to fall like that. And yeah, it would be cool to kind of see that done. So that's it on the Star Wars front. Let's keep
so
it moving.
So much to look forward to. There's so much.
Well, it depends. Depends who's doing it and how they do it. Because if it's more sequel trilogy than The Mandalorian, I don't know.
But would you be like unhappy about that?
I mean, I'd like a series. I like these limited series. I really much do. Just get in, like, not crazy. Like, we're not planning four seasons. Just get in, tell a story, move on. And Star Wars is so wide open. Let's keep it widespread and make great things each time, you know, like great stories, and then just keep it moving. All right, moving on from Star Wars over to Marvel, you know, because to get real far away from Disney for a little bit, Marvel just announced we got wind of a big kind of casting, and it really is kind of cool, because it's a cool guy that it happened to, and I'm kind of excited by this. But Lovecraft Country star Jonathan Majors, who also you might have seen pop up in The Five Bloods, has been cast in a major kind of villain role in Ant-Man 3. And a lot of speculation, or is it confirmed by now? I forget where we're at with that. But it seemed pretty, like, everybody's heavy sources were that he's going to be playing Kang the Conqueror, which is a majorly big deal that we've previously talked about on the show, and we've gone into length about why Kang is kind of the pivotal villain for this next phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And now it seems like we've confirmed that's the case, and that's where we're going. So, just to kind of like reiterate, Kang is this time-hopping, alternate reality-hopping warlord who is actually several different people in Marvel lore, because of the fact that he has access to time travel and alternate realities. He's also used these devices at different points in his life when he was a very different man to become very different people. So the main kind of thing is he's Kang, is the main kind of persona that, you know, we center on. But before he became Kang and he first got into time travel, he went back to ancient Egypt and he became the Pharaoh Rama Tut, and was a pivotal figure in shaping like the early Fantastic Four, key things with the Avengers, and not to mention kind of creating all of, you know, mutant kind by helping an Egyptian slave named Insaba Nur manifest the first known mutant powers and become Apocalypse. And so
he's busy.
Yeah, he's busy. Been, so he's a busy dude, yeah.
And it's, it can just, get confusing for non-comic book readers.
Oh, no, and, but that's also the joy. The confusion, I think, could be the joy of this. And we've said this before. Like, done right, this is a villain who can be several people that you meet in the Marvel Cinematic Universe before you realize they're all the same person from different points. That could be a great mystery that that flows through different...
It could be a really great reveal.
Multitude, I'm wondering if we'll see him in Doctor Strange.
So many kinds of shows and movies without having to kind of beat you over the head, and it's much different than, like, the Thanos thing.
Right.
So it's kind of going to be cool to see who Jonathan Majors actually plays and how they do this, because is he going to be... And it also suggests so many other things because of, like, what we're saying. So... That means that, I mean, this could mean it's a whole cascade of kind of casting differences, no matter how they play it, because Kang is also this old scholarly master of time who's kind of like an overseer of everything in realities in time, Immortus, who could be cast as either Jonathan Majors with age makeup on, or you could get somebody like older, an older kind of also African-American actor who's really famous, like, to also be that character.
Yeah.
Like, it'd be cool to see Morgan Freeman be Immortus.
I was just going to say Morgan
Freeman. Oh my gosh, perfect.
I mean, who else would convey, like, Immortus better than Morgan Freeman?
No one. There is no one.
In his past, he also, as a young man to not become Kang, he decides to become a hero called Iron Lad with his own suit of armor and forms the Young Avengers, something that we know is already taking shape in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so, again, you now have a recasting of this younger version of Kang as a young kind of African-American male actor who would be a central part of Young Avengers. The internet's going crazy because in certain versions of the telling, Kang's real person is a guy from the 31st century who's a descendant of Reed Richards, or in other versions, I think he's his father in other versions of the Marvel Universe. Or Adam was trying to explain this to me, because I didn't think this was true, but Adam was trying to say in some timeline, he's like his father.
Oh, God. Okay.
I'm just sticking with it, because the internet's going nuts. I'm sticking with what I know. What I know is that Kang is Reed Richards' descendant, distant descendant in the 31st century, which means now has people reverse engineering their thoughts to say that Reed Richards could be recast as a black actor as well, to kind of make that continuity. So. Well, that's kind of a little more flimsy because it doesn't have to be. I don't know if people know how family works, but you could get blacker over time even if you didn't start. Like, there's been back and forth shifts in families for years. I don't want to get into the genetics of things, but, like, yeah, you can have Jonathan Majors in the 31st century from a very white Reed Richards in the 21st century.
Very true.
Yeah, so that's possible. But anyway, all that good stuff aside, like, it is a major thing. And like I said, where he shows up and how he shows up, I can imagine him playing Kang and Rama Tut. That'd be a thing. And I would love to see another Immortus and a different Iron Lad. And
I'm happy for the dude, because that's like, this is like my favorite show that I haven't gotten to yet. But, like, I can't, all I hear is wonderful things. And I'm really happy for him that, like, this is awesome. And I mean, yeah, it has not been confirmed yet, but it's pretty much kind of locked in, unless there's just some major change. It seems Kang.
I don't know why Jonathan Majors would turn down that Kang money.
Right. Yeah. Like, why would you turn it down? I mean, I do agree with Janelle. Like, this is very, it really needs a deft touch to make it not what, like, Endgame ended up being criticized for in a lot of ways, of that, like, how confusing time travel can be if not handled with the right touch. Like, it can
and
be just, it's just by the nature of it.
Too much information.
It's
like,
a
sometimes
lot.
You feel like you get too much information and then it muddles, like, really understanding each character. And if we do see him in different variations, like, to be able to understand and like or hate this specific character in whatever role he's in. I just hope they give him enough time.
Yeah, but I do agree that at this point, like, you know, Marvel has done an exceptional job at that specific thing. So, look, until they just don't kill it or even get it remotely, you know, like, really a solid job on it, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But yeah, I mean, this is cool.
And the cool thing is, as we've pointed out in one of our features, this could all be starting really soon. Last rumor we heard before Jonathan Majors was cast as Kang was that this could be kicking off as soon as the Loki series on Disney Plus, which could be the first mention Bureau kind of looking.
That would make all the sense in the world.
Yeah, it would.
And be the first kind of tease, if not reveal, of who this guy is. So kind of looking forward to this, and I'm wondering if he got cast because of that. I mean, we heard Ant-Man 3, but it wouldn't be shocking for Marvel.
That was weird to me.
It, yeah. Me too.
I was like, I was surprised. Oh, cool. And then they were like, Ant-Man 3.
In Ant-Man, yeah. But I'll take it however they want to give it to me. It's fine.
Button scene, technically it's true, but it's like a crazy button scene. I don't know. Anyway.
Right, yeah, it could very well be that. But this would be enough to get me excited about the Loki series, because currently I'm not.
So what?
Yeah. We're not getting sidetracked. We got to move on.
I see that little one out there.
Matt and his eclectic tastes are notwithstanding. We are going to move right along. So yeah, Wonder Woman. We haven't talked about this, but Wonder Woman 1984. Since our last podcast, I believe had to pick up stakes and move. It's going to from October to Christmas. Okay. And because people have just kind of realized that many movie theaters, we've seen Tenet, and while Warner Brothers is keeping Tenet money's news close to the vest and not exactly being sharing with it, it's clear that it's not like the box office is definitely not lit back up yet due to the coronavirus pandemic, and studios are not willing to bet their movies on it. So Wonder Woman has moved, and it's looking like, you know, by the time you hear this, by the time we get to record again, Black Widow could be...
It's going to be moving from
November to another date.
Because, gee, who could have guessed
Matt,
that the market wasn't ready for that?
Definitely not, Matt.
Lo and behold, Mulan and Tenet both crash and burn.
You not risking your life for the reason you love or why we are here. No. nobody do that. Just, yeah, don't send me letters. But, yeah, so it's looking like, I mean, don't be surprised, don't be shocked if Marvel pulls Black Widow, because they're not willing to take that hit, and they really want to make sure that people are at least going back to, or at least that other markets like New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, ones. The big ones are open again to get that money. So,
well, that's the most interesting part of this is that the stat that 70% of U.S. theaters are open, like that was actually more than I thought. I'd actually assumed less open, but the fact that that many are open, but it's those key markets that aren't, and you realize like how much those markets make up of our overall domestic box office.
Oh yeah, dude! Like,
you know,
if you've ever lived in any of those markets, then you've seen the movie weekends. Where, like, I lived right next to the 34th Street Theater in New York for 7 years, and just the amount of weekends of big movies where people were stretched all the way up the avenue, up to my doorstep, was insane. And it is, like, New York, L.A., big cities like that are, I mean, it is just a machine. It is shuffle people in to the brim of every theater, shuffle them back out, clean it quick, or clean it, air quotes, quick, and then shuffle the next batch in. And it is just a calculated machine of that's how you get those grosses and those billions. And like, yeah.
And they can't make $200 million on Wonder Woman. They can't make $200 million on Black Widow. Like, right. They're just not going to.
No.
So. Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll keep you guys updated. Right now, we're going to take a break, pay some bills. But when we come back, we are going to do some... We're going to talk really quick about some crazy stuff that's happening to make 2020 even more nuts, and then we're going to deep dive into some TV catch up, a new documentary, and some comics. So stay tuned for all of it.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, so this is our Flash portion. We're back, and we don't have a lot of time for this because I said this was all time permitting and whatnot. oh, I should be over here. There we go. So I said this was time permitting. And so we're just going to really do kind of like a quick round of this. But I just had to mention, it's been crazy in our office today, kind of covering some of the things we cover. We try to cover all of geek culture, which means all the absurd fast food things and people eat or drink.
That's like gamer culture.
I was hoping we'd
Well, we do gammy gamer culture is part of it. So
yeah,
we're talking about these new fast food. Fast food is getting into booze, apparently. And to kick that off, Red Lobster's partnered up and created a Mountain Dew cocktail.
Yeah!
Because America wasn't America enough yet. We had to keep going. So now we're making Mountain Dew cocktails. And Taco Bell's going to start selling wine, because whenever I have tacos, the first thing I think is, man, why don't I have a glass of wine?
It's only in Canada, though, and that sucks. Yeah. I mean, I'm more excited about the Mountain Dew cocktail. That what is it, the Dew Garita? Is that what it is?
It's something, something interesting.
It's a Mountain Dew Margarita.
D-E-W, all caps,
I can't.
I want to try it. Baja Blast is amazing.
Are you kidding me, Wheeler? This is about to become the official state drink of Florida. Are you?
I was a bartender for specialty cocktails, and I'm just not. I just give me a really nice tequila on the rocks.
Well, we're
not messing up beautiful tequila with
a Mountain
Dew. We can't
all do that. Some of us need to cut our booze.
Yeah, man. I need a Dougarita with my cheddar biscuits. Yeah, leave me be.
I mean,
No, those are two different restaurants. No, is it? No, the wine is at Taco Bell.
It's Red Lobster, man. Cheddar biscuits.
That actually doesn't sound bad.
It sounds good. Now, if it was cheddar biscuit flavored, it would be gross. But it's not.
No, get a nice hot cheddar biscuit.
Did you just come up with something?
Wash it down with a Dougarita. Yeah.
It's orange vodka juice.
Oh, my God. So this is the thing.
If McDonald's came out with the orange Hi-C, some kind of like beverage with that, I would be down.
You lost me at Hi-C.
No, I think we said like the McDonald's martini needs to happen.
It's like the orange drink.
No, we said the KFC bourbon drinks need to happen.
Crush.
Oh, okay. Bourbon and chicken. I'm down.
Yeah, that's not a crazy one. KFC, if you're listening, get on that.
But that would be a 2 COP. So they can only do probably wine and beer. And then the full-blown restaurants that already have liquor licenses, they're the ones that can actually I used to be a wine sales rep.
Wait,
so
what is COP?
I don't know.
You have to have certain
Listen,
licenses.
Nerd, you're blowing our hypothetical.
What is COP?
All right, we're moving on. Next thing is, so some of these things can't happen, is what Janelle's telling you from bartending experience. But
no,
I'm
wine
going
sales.
To dream.
It's fine.
I'm going to dream that KFC will serve me a bucket of chicken and some kind of bourbon crush
drink. Bourbon
drink. Yes. All right.
Bourbon glazed chicken.
In today's non-egotistical news, Madonna's directing her own biopic.
What? I didn't even see that in the show notes. Oh, my gosh.
That's the best segue.
And she co-wrote it with Diablo Cody, which is hilarious. No, but that's let me be clear. I'm ragging on Madonna just because I'm just grabbing the low-hanging fruit. But let's not have a double standard here. We all love Private Parts, which, of course, is Howard Stern's biopic about Howard Stern, which is fine. So I guess you got to count this one in, too.
Isn't that one? Okay, this remains to be seen because, of course, obviously, we haven't seen this yet. But that movie's pretty self-deprecating. Too. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it takes some pot shots. He's aware of certain things, whether you like the movie or not. I'm just saying, like, he's aware of certain myths about him and things he's done. I kind of hope that she's the same way. Like, if she's kind of open to that, taking a couple jabs at yourself, I think be interesting.
Yes, that was a good speech, Jump Gun Jim, but I mean, that's where I was about to get to next was.
It wasn't like it was a separate topic on here and I jumped it willingly.
sentence literally was going to be, my only hope is that Madonna will be able to be as honest and unflinching about yourself in a biopic as you need to be. I can understand if it's like one of those, I don't trust anybody to tell my story type things.
You're right, yeah.
And I'll get into my own kind of, you know, dark stuff, but I hope it also isn't just one long, you know, Vogue commercial, like, you know, making it all look artsy, because there's some interesting things in Madonna's backstory.
Is she going to play herself at any point? Because she is an actor, you know, she's been in some stuff. and you know, she doesn't shy away from the camera.
If you're directing it, how would you not at least?
Okay. Well, let's see if which tone you get from McDonough's statement about this.
Okay.
She says, I want to convey the incredible journey that life has taken me on as an artist, a musician, a dancer, a human being trying to make her way in this world. The focus of the film will always be music. Music has kept me going and art has kept me alive. There are so many untold and inspiring stories, and who better to tell it than me? It's essential to share the roller coaster ride of my life with my voice and vision. And she was praised as the ultimate icon, humanitarian artist, and rebel.
Wow. That is...
I do get it, just like you said. I do get that, like, okay, I wouldn't really want somebody else telling my life story, and then I look at it, and I'm like, that's not even my life story. That didn't happen.
But... I'm kind of bummed that it's only music-focused, because I kind of want a whole little thing about Big Trixie.
I just want to know about, like, her dating.
Stuff. Yeah, like, I want to know all the spicy stuff. Give me the spice.
Spice blanche.
Well, who knows? This could be great.
I mean, it could be. I mean, it could be the next, like, Rocket Man or something.
Yeah.
Or next, Ray or...
I'm a huge fan of Madonna, have been since I was a little kid, so yeah, I mean, probably be checking this out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not hating on Madonna. I've always loved Madonna through every iteration of Madonna. Madonna drops hits. Like, I'm not hating on Madonna at all. I hope it is. And I hope it brings back, like, 90s Madonna, because Madonna was, like, a real actress in the 90s, and she did some pretty far out there stuff. Body of Evidence made me more of a man than I was before I ever watched that movie. But, I mean, she was like a really actually talented actress and did good dramatic work. So, I mean, I hope that those sensibilities she can turn around into directing and kind of nail it. I mean, Angelina Jolie's great. Olivia Wilde's been great. I mean, these people who are very famous, you know, beauty, cover of magazine beauty, like people, famous people can actually... I mean, it's a stigma, especially on the female side, to say, to balk at it initially, because it could be good. I haven't seen one, but I haven't seen, like, really what Madonna's done in years, so it's going to be interesting to catch up. Yeah. Hopefully she stole a lot from Guy Ritchie. If there's a bunch of sped up sequences, I'll be like, get him!
That's great.
All right, moving right along. We got to keep it moving. Let's talk and deep dive. Let's check in with two series we are watching currently. We're going to talk about the boys in Lovecraft Country. I guess I'm the only one who's still watching Lovecraft Country because I'm the only, like, streaming baller over here. HBO Max.
You have all of them.
The Vow. Matt's watching The Vow. So how are you not up on Lovecraft Country?
Man, I don't know. Like, it's just it's not for any lack of, like, wanting to watch it. I just haven't made the time. Like, it's totally my fault. Like, I can't blame anything else. It looks amazing. I hear nothing but good things about it. I will at some point make some time for this.
Did we ever get an update on the Roku HBO thing?
What did I hear? I read something.
Me too. I think it is coming. It's just not here yet.
Because I remember reading it and went, oh, Janelle will be happy. I literally thought that, when I saw that news.
I got a couple tweets.
I've also been watching a lot of Peacock lately, so I can't.
Oh.
I mean, until then, you can feel free to grab some water or some coffee or something while we're doing these segments. While we're talking about big HBO Max stuff. Don't worry. We'll get you in there eventually. All right. So Matt's quasi-racist statements aside, we're going to keep moving on. I'm just joking. You don't have to watch Lovecraft Country. I'm just kidding.
How much is George Lopez on Peacock?
Oh my God,
wow.
I love that.
The tribalism is real, isn't it? I think half our listeners are going to be confused, who still are confused about our racial identities. They're going to be like, what is happening? I don't know if this is okay to listen to. All right, but moving right along before we get canceled, literally and figuratively. I'll talk about Lovecraft Country. If you haven't been keeping up, this show is, I mean, like I said, I teased it and tried to tell you because I had seen a bunch of episodes. We've now caught up to what I was embargoed from seeing 5 episodes in. And man, this past weekend was my favorite one. It's kind of a really twisted take on Freaky Friday. It's kind of a racial horror take on Freaky Friday, where one of the black characters gets to kind of use this potion to switch skins into a white woman and kind of go through the world of the 1950s as a white woman for a time. And yeah, it gets really intense. And the ending, people were blowing up about the ending because Lovecraft Country gets really raw sometimes and really can kind of go there. And this episode was a really great example of that, but also the kind of fun pulpy twists and stuff, because there was a lot of big reveals and character reveals in this one. And the show has been good. They did an episode where it was a haunted house episode. They did one where they went on this kind of Indiana Jones journey of the center of the earth, which was big because they'd never really done that with black characters, and episode looking for this kind of artifact. And so, like I said in the beginning and tried to tease, it combines a lot of crazy pulpy kind of serial old horror flavors together. It mixes it beautifully with kind of like racial and historical commentary. And yeah, it's doing a great job. I mean, Journey Smollett has like kind of really jumped out of that show. Jonathan Majors is getting Marvel roles. I don't want to say her name wrong, but the lady who was a star of this week's episode, who was in Batman v Superman. Oh man, I forget her name. It's an African name and I do not want to butcher it, but she is, I mean, killing it on the show. And so, and Michael K. Williams is once again killing it. Yeah, Omar Little. So, yeah, if you're not watching Lovecraft Country, you really should be checking that out because, like I said, it's a good mix of kind of everything from Get Out to just really out there macabre horror stuff. And, yeah.
HBO. All right, I make a promise. I will catch up by next time we talk about it. The next new episode of the show, I will catch up.
All right, you heard it here.
All right. Because, I mean, look, it sounds amazing. I can't wait.
No, it's a good time. It's a really good time. Let's talk about The Boys. So now The Boys is weekly after our first batch of crazy episodes. And this last episode was a bit slower in terms, but great, but better in terms of just doing character development stuff.
Yeah.
And of course, it had some moments we definitely got to talk about. So first up, the most popular thing is the Homelander stuff, right?
Which spoilers, by the way, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Spoilers for The Boys. Boys, episode 4, season 2, episode 4, spoilers for The Boys. So Elizabeth Shue kind of made a surprise return cameo in this episode as, what's her name, Madeline and...
Stillwell, yeah.
Stillwell, yeah. Homelander's kind of the handler and crazy, disturbing love obsession. And, you know, everybody was just like, WTF, how is this possible? Because he fried her eyes and brains out of her head at the end of last season. And, of course, it turns out to be some only in the Boys twisted take on superhero powers with a character who's basically like X-Men's Mystique, is a shapeshifter. And he has his dude shapeshift into Madeline so he can replay their creepy psychosexual affair, which is just a really twisted thing in the moment where the shapeless sister loses control of himself and reverts back to being like a really gross, stubby, middle-aged man. Yeah.
Change back. I'm trying. Yeah. It hurts.
Yeah.
Don't watch the show with your in-laws.
Oh, God, no. Okay.
No, yeah, don't I would never. Suggest that. I would never.
Wow. I don't even really like watching it with my fiance. I mean, honestly, there's some
so funny. I love this show so much.
We got more of the mystery of Stormfront and like what is going on with her and why she like flipped out at the end of episode 3 and was just murdering people in the projects and, you know, saying racist stuff to an Asian man who she brutally murdered and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, she's... Stormfront is not who she says she is. She's kind of a character who kind of reinvents herself in her superhero persona. She used to be Lady Liberty, I believe her name was, in the 1950s. And she also went around murdering black people because of the hell of it. So she's a racist piece of garbage who's kind of hiding in the persona of a kind of new age, woke Portland, Gen Z-er or millennial, I guess, which is so hilarious to me because The Boys is just kind of like stepping into a cultural grenade that like, and they'll get a pass because it's The Boys, but like they could have never predicted like what would be happening.
They didn't really drop this bomb.
Racist American under like subgroups in.
I feel like it should have been a bigger
Portland
deal.
Portland would be directly clashing at this time. So
yeah.
Interesting commentary from The Boys. They're probably just waiting for their letters to come in.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, and they make these so far in advance. It's really crazy how it keeps working out to where the stuff is just so timely. Like we talked about with Excellence, right? It's like forever ago. And then the stuff just keeps, anyway, that's a whole other discussion, but yeah, no, this, I love what they do with that character, because that character is so screwed up. Like, that character's so screwed up and manipulative, and like the Homelander stuff they're doing with that character, and then you're starting to see the past. It's like steals the show so many times, not just as a character in like moments, but just like as the overall narrative kind of builds and stuff. That's some of the most interesting stuff. So
also I got to feel like a colossal ass, because they pretty much settled any debate about what happened to Billy Butcher's wife in this episode with some pretty succinct dialogue that leaves no room for mistakes. So there we go, we can settle that debate. Connor Casey was right, I was wrong. Let it be noted here. So there you go.
And that stuff, by the way, that conversation, the one like after the van, is like so, like there's so much like gut punch there of like their relationship just doesn't really go the way that I feel like a lot of people expected it
right
to go when they finally reunite, things like that. And that's what I love. Like, that's the stuff I really like, that they keep changing that just enough to where it's not just sitting into those formulated tropes that we so often see.
They really do that a lot in that show.
Yeah.
Which is good.
And also, finally, my whole thing was, my note was, Black Noir is like one of the scariest characters ever. Like, whenever that dude's on screen, I am worried about whoever he is around.
Yes.
Like, I was so worried. Like, the most edge of my seat thing in this episode was just that poor little analyst who was sitting there, like, looking for Billy Butcher for him. And I was like, please don't kill her. She looks so nice. Please don't kill her.
We're going to talk about, like, the whole Scientology references with the Deep.
Oh, man. Would you like a Fresca? Yeah.
It's been compared, like, directly to, like, Tom Cruise and his wife, how it was all just, like, a staged thing. That Scientology made them get married, and how it's that they're kind of like making fun of that with the Deep right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I got all that, but to be honest, the deep stuff is the stuff I hate the most.
I think it's so funny.
I admit that was a slow build for me. Like, that was the thing that honestly, I didn't really start to love the collective stuff until like the final few episodes. Like, that to me was like the one that took me the longest to kind of get on board with. Cause I'm like, okay, I understand where you're going.
Right.
I'm still kind of waiting for that payoff. And so, yeah, it was a lot. Though I do now go around offering frescas to everybody.
Yeah.
So
it was like the thing that framed the entire episode were those interviews with the different women. Yeah. And it was like the least interesting. By the time it finally came back to it, I was like, oh yeah, that's what.
Yeah.
I
was like,
I agree. Yeah. So, all right, that's my check-in with the boys. Let's talk about the social dilemma. So Netflix put up this documentary, which is a pretty stunning documentary that seems to be really kind of having a strong rippling effect across the mainstream right now, as people kind of dig into it and it spreads, and word of mouth seems like it's catching like fire, because what it is a documentary that essentially takes a bunch of kind of tech pioneers and experts from key companies involved in the rise of social media in the 2010s and early 2000s to 2010s. People from everything from guys who helped develop the first, you know, the early Instagrams, Twitter, iterations of Facebook, like Pinterest, Snapchat, like Reddit, like all this stuff, right? That we know is now such a big part of our, you know, fabric of our lives. And it's basically this kind of revelatory explanation about like what it is that social media truly is from the people who are not only been on the inside, but, you know, helped create it. And it's kind of this tale of Frankenstein, you know, your typical Frankenstein tale, which is all too common, which is we actually started something we thought would be really good, and we never foresaw how bad it's gotten. And now we truly believe, like, we're here sounding an alarm bell that this is a potential kind of civilization ender, that we're kind of on the trajectory that we're currently on. And it's a pretty frightening expose in a way, because it uses, and it somehow effectively uses one of those cheesy, dramatic, like, dramatic stages.
Yeah, what was that from the dude from Angel?
Yeah.
I was like,
I don't know.
I was like, what is this? But yeah, anyway.
Yeah. But he uses a kind of dramatic reenactment to tell the story of a family who is dealing with, you know, the struggles with social media and the kids and all that stuff. But basically what it kind of reveals is that, like, yeah, social media is, when you boil it down, it's a drug. And it's a drug in the same way that, like, gambling is created and why casinos work. That are, there's a psychology behind it about tapping into human psychology and refining all these processes that physically kind of make us dependent on these kind of, like, reactions and these interactions using one of the most powerful forces in human instinct, which is the need for social connection and to be around others, to kind of basically turn us into a product. And the dreadlock guy is crazy, but I love that guy because I feel like he's the guy who keeps it all the way real with you throughout the whole thing. And because they're saying, like, you're the product, you're being sold to advertisers as guaranteed advertising space. And what he says is a little more chilling, which is, the actual product is changing your behavior over time and never having you be aware that this massive change to you has happened. Mm-hmm. And to kind of rewrite your behavior patterns and to the advantage of advertisers and people selling things. And, like, yeah, I think the part that made me start puking in my mouth was, like, the kind of the real look at all the stats about you that are collected. Yeah. And basically what they describe as a very virtual kind of voodoo doll of you that is basically an AI algorithm, not a human being, an AI algorithm that knows you better than you basically know yourself and is targeting you for things, like, constantly, and gets smarter and smarter and smarter and smarter based on the interactions you have on social media, on any of your platforms, and has every record of anything you've ever done on social media, including who you looked at, for how long you looked at them, which was like, whoa, I was like, oh my God, that's pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
Like, and
it,
like,
makes you wonder, like, are they saving things that we delete? Like, say you go on Instagram and you delete
that's,
a picture
that's
of your
not
ex.
A wonder, Janelle, that's not a wonder.
It's, I know, it's but
absolute,
like,
hard yes. Because it doesn't matter about the data that you deleted. It keeps a record that you had that data in the first place or were interested in that data in the first place, which is the key.
Yeah.
It doesn't need, it's not like a blackmail scheme, like, which is what people worry about. This is saying, like, you're worrying about the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. Your old pictures you delete are not.
Oh, yeah. I would be way more worried if I was a parent. Like, when I was watching this, I was like, I can't imagine bringing a child into this world. Like, if I had a kid right now, I would be throwing up. But for me personally, like, from where I come from, I thought the more chilling and terrifying stuff, because I was already aware of all this. I'm an internet person. I'm on all the time. I make my living on the internet. I know what they're taking. All of my notifications have been turned off on my phone for years. I choose what to put up, which isn't directly affecting, like, it's not me. Like, I would like to post a picture of my parents and my fiance every day, but nobody wants to see that. So I don't ever post it. It's literally just selfies of me because that's what people want to look at. Like, I already know that people don't want to know what makes me happy. They want, you know, a nice filter on a selfie in front of a Zelda.
Yeah.
Shield.
But what you don't maybe understand or realize is, you've been conditioned to not express that part of yourself, which was so.
But I don't need
a
to.
Fundamental part of yourself, but
right. Like, but I don't, because I don't know a lot of the people that are looking at my.
Yeah,
stuff.
But take away social media, would you still act like that based on these kind of?
I probably interaction just be on social media.
Yeah,
like my fiance, for example, like, isn't even on any social media platforms, and, like, he is an alias. Like, I never say his name. Like, we don't even go there, right? But what frightened me the most was actually the political and like all of the stuff that's going on where they're influencing, like, people to believe flat earth, or for people to want to go persecute and destroy other cultures. Or, I mean, that to me, that's what they say, like, that's going to completely devastate the world. Like, that's what's going to make the world shut down. Like, my self-esteem is low because I didn't get enough likes. I don't care about that as much personally. But, like I said, if I was a parent, I would be very worried about the likes and the popularity of it. And, you know, the filters that you put on your face to make you look prettier. And then that changes the way you want to look in real life. And then you get down on yourself. Like they did show both sides. So if you don't have children or if that doesn't really hit you, there's another side to this that will hit you. You know what I mean? Like it's kind of freaky on all sides.
Danielle's starting to really depress me. as someone with an 8-month-year-old.
Have you watched it? Matt, did you watch it?
Yes, okay. But it was
I've had to have the struggles with my own child where we had to, when she discovered what phones and stuff were, I mean, it was almost like instant addiction. We had to wean her off. It took about a year to kind of control and scale down how much access and how freely she was able to get those things, mm-hmm. not just from us, but from our entire social circle.
Yeah. And then you're the one kid that doesn't have the cell phone in middle school. No, but like that must be so tough.
I mean, you know, there is, and there's deeper. I know kids who are further along, like the statistics, the kid stuff, it's not just self-esteem. Like mm-hmm. the statistics they were talking about are real. There mm-hmm. has been a significant spike in kids who are depressed, anxious, cut themselves, hurt themselves, suicide, all of that mm-hmm. because of this one source of things. And you also got to, I think it's more impactful because they're also showing a decline in civilization itself. Like because these kids grow up like this, there's less aptitude for actual social interaction and healthy social development, relationships, things like
dating.
That.
They don't want driver's licenses. They're confident. They have zero confidence.
Yeah. But what happens to us with a generation of kids underneath us that are basically, sociopaths
That was actually the part that I took away the most from was mm-hmm. the one where it was during one of those reenactments. But when the two boys are sitting on the couch or the bench or whatever, and he keeps like, all right, well, we need to let's send a notification now. And like you go from these two people talking to them by the end of it, they're both sitting there on their phones next to each other in a public place. But there's staring
because
at their phones
they
like
both
they're locked
dared
in.
To break their algorithm of usage and socially interact. And
that
so
was
they
crazy.
Were both kind of subtly called back. And the one thing I disagree with, Janelle, you were saying before, was the thing that was chilling to me about the society destruction thing is that there is no they that like targets people for this.
Right.
What they were saying.
It's AI.
Like, there is no they. But it's not the AI. It's not even the computer that does it. It's we do it to ourselves.
Yeah. It builds like, this times, community of like-minded people.
Yeah. So
whether it's right or wrong.
Yourself
around
in the
you.
Bubble.
Yeah.
Like you feel yourself in a bubble.
It's crazy.
And you begin to believe that everything you are seeing on social media is the world instead of your world.
Yeah.
Where no two of us, even us who might have the exact same interest enough to do a podcast, we don't see the same feeds. We don't see the same news. We are not seeing the same world. And so like we work ourselves into these crazy matrix cocoons and to the point where we can't relate. And we think like, I'm the only one who's sane and everybody else is insane.
Yeah, that's where they get it from.
How can they not see this? And it's just like,
it's everywhere.
All of us just like nuts running around in these little bubbles, trying to hack each other to pieces because we think it's the only way to save the world. And it's like, that's the real insanity here. It's just like, and nobody's at the switch.
Right.
A machine doesn't care. A machine's not nefarious. It's not like Terminator. This isn't Skynet coming.
It doesn't know. There's no way for it to
tell
what's real or fake.
It's supposed to be doing just better and better and better, which is feed us back our own echo chamber of crap and sell us stuff that therefore they know we want based on all this information they have of us. And it's just like,
how many times have you like said something out loud? And then all of a sudden you have an ad for it and you're like, wait a minute, I didn't even search this. Like how do they know that I need this couch that I'm looking for or something? I mean, it's wild. Mm-hmm. But it is, okay, in case people are listening and they're freaking out because you haven't watched it, it does have a little bit of light because the people that made this have started a foundation and they are like our superheroes and they are trying to stand up for us.
No. They are not, though.
They're trying to find ways.
They are not going to save you.
They're fighting.
They are not going to save you. Here's what they are doing and here's what we all need to jump on the page of. Oh my God. Yeah.
That's the whole thing. The whole thing exists. That whole show exists because of these founders of this institution.
But I'm not waiting on the founders.
You wouldn't even know this existed at all, Cokie, if it worked
all
for this program.
I know this existed, but I've never seen it compiled.
Exactly. And who compiled it for you?
The foundation.
People that are trying to help you.
The foundation did.
I'm right.
Love
Thank
this.
You.
I'm not saying the foundation's bad. I'm not saying you're wrong. All I'm saying is what the end point was that the guys were saying was, it's not bad. You're right. You don't have to throw out the baby with the bathwater. Social media is not entirely bad. What's bad is the business model of data mining for purpose of capitalistic with unbridled capitalism. Taking all the information about us and using it to create these things that sell. Fake news and conspiracy theories sell because they create interaction. They create people to read and spend more time and therefore see more advertising than real news does. And so as long as that's the practice driving social media, it is more profitable to social media companies to feed you crap and fake news and conspiracy theories and divisional stuff because that pulls up interactions than it is for them to refine and actually use it for good, spreading information and doing all this positive stuff.
And so now you have people that are out there acknowledging it.
Yes.
Yeah. And, they're trying to fight for us in Congress and say, hey, we need to take back our freedom. So at least we know now, right? At least us three know, right? Or now whoever is listening to the podcast. And maybe it will reach even further. And maybe if we all band together and say, hey, we deserve some freedom here. Like, you do not have the right to to save all of the information that we, you know, all of our data. I feel like we could turn this around. I mean, we have to. That's how they end it. They said, we have to change this or we're done.
Yeah. So, yeah, there you go.
And they say, turn off notifications.
Yeah.
So, and don't use Google.
I mean, yeah, there you go. So, Social Dilemma. We'll let you guys see it and make up your own minds about how you feel about that.
Love it.
Let us know at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. All right. We're going to turn ourselves out by talking comics here. I guess we got time to talk about one.
We can save it for the next show if you want to go into a little bit more detail since it is coming out this week.
Take us through, because I do want to talk actually about two things and one of them won't be here until next show. So.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so let's just run through comics. So, of course, that issue that Kofi is alluding to is Batman number 99, which is the next step in the Joker War. And there are a few big things in that issue. Detective is also came out this week that has some other Joker War tie-in stuff. So if you are kind of looking to read everything connected to that, you probably do want to pay attention to that. But there is a lot in here, so we'll definitely get to that. Next episode. We also have X-Men number 12, which is X of Swords Prelude. So again, if you are ready to hop on board that X-Men train, then you definitely want to start reading some of these other tie-ins and preludes. Also in the tie-in category is Justice League number 53, which while not really, like it's kind of labeled as its own thing, but it really is. If you're reading Death Metal, this one is a worthy tie-in. It really focuses on Nightwing and Wonder Woman and some parts of that that are really, or sorry, not Wonder Woman, Hawk Girl that are kind of interesting regarding that. So you definitely want to check that out. We also have Thor number 7. Once in Future number 11 is so good. It's so good. I keep shouting from the rooftops, but that book is so good. Giant Size X-Men Storm number 1. Iron Man number 1. This is the big relaunch. And I mean, people know probably by now, I'm not the biggest Iron Man person. This was really good. I mean, the last run was kind of uneven. I thought it started out pretty good, and then it was just kind of uneven. This is really good. Like, this actually got me excited about an Iron Man book again. So hopefully it continues. Seven Secrets number 2 is out. That issue is if people remember from when we interviewed the creators, that first issue ends in a gut punch. This one is different, but I will say equally as good to me. Amazing Spider-Man, Sins of Norman Osborn, number 1. Stillwater, number 1. X-Men Marvel Snapshots, number 1. This is as the cover suggests, a Cyclops-focused book. This is a Cyclops story. And for any fellow Cyclops fans, I feel like this was excellent. So, I mean, definitely seek this out. These are kind of just one-off, one-shots. But this one is definitely one if you are an X-Men fan. Big Girls number 2, Dead Day number 3, and Heavy number 1, which is a new series that kind of focuses on this guy who kind of goes to purgatory and he wants to get back to see his wife in heaven. And so he has to kind of work off. He's kind of a bounty hunter in this life of like taking care of sickos and people who just like need to be offed in one timeline because they affect other timelines. Like there's this whole thing about, I believe it's Leonardo da Vinci, but like in this one version of his world, he like takes over the world and all these machines and tortures people. What? And so like that screws up other timelines. He can infect other ones. So when he comes and takes him out, it helps all these other worlds grow. And so he's doing this to work off karma points to eventually get to his wife. And then there's a huge reveal towards the end of like that changes up that story completely. It's really good. Like this is a very different series from Vault Comics, but I definitely recommend if you're looking for something kind of different.
That sounds awesome. It sounds heavy.
Cool. Boom! So definitely check that out if you're looking for something new. And that is comics.
All right. Thanks, Matt. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. If you're just getting into the show, we put up episodes every Wednesday and every Friday on comicbook.com, where you can listen on the site, or you can listen on your favorite podcast platforms. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists, iHeartRadio, and you can tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation podcast, and it'll start playing for you. If you want to watch video of the podcast, you can always catch it live on Facebook every Wednesday and every Friday to see our smiling faces. If you want to talk to us, drop any subjects, say what's up, or just kind of follow along with the show, you can always find us at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
And you can find me at Janelle Wheeler.
And if you like the show, please go on Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star review. When we get back in our offices after all the lockdowns and office shutdowns, we are going to clean out our merch closet and send everybody who sent left us a 5-star review a nice Comic Book Nation t-shirt. So if you want to get yours, be sure to just go on Apple Podcasts and leave us that 5-star review. Otherwise, we want to thank you guys for listening. And as always, we are Comic Book Nation, and we will see you next time. Peace.